Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off by talking about what else, the big rule change in the NFL this year. Then we get into the news with Jenny, and as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. We're back. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. This week's kind of a fire drill. Our studio's under renovation, and we're doing this on Thursday because the owners' meetings were this week, and Connor couldn't make it in. We are going to pay tribute to Connor in, I just say, the vocab that we used in the news topics. But we wanted to give you guys a podcast for this week. You're getting it on Friday morning instead of Wednesday morning. So that's where we're at. And I think there's no other place to start this week than with the big rule change coming out of the owners' meetings in Arizona. That rule change is a little more of an adjustment. It adds pass interference, both offensive and defensive, to the coach's challenge system, which means coaches can challenge them for 56 minutes of regulation, and then the final 2 minutes, the first half end of the game, the replay official has jurisdiction over those. It's a breakthrough, I think, in two different areas, and we're going to get to this in the news topics. Number one, it's a breakthrough in that it's making a judgment call reviewable, which we haven't seen before. And number two, it's a breakthrough in that a non-call is now reviewable, which we haven't seen before. Again, we're going to get to those in a minute, but I think the overriding thing for me here is just that finally, the priority was on getting it right. It wasn't on what the networks are going to think about this. It wasn't on the game going 3.5 or 4 hours. It was on actually getting it right. You have the technology to get it right, so just freaking get it right. And if you want to look at this in just the most plain way that you possibly can and break everything down, There was no reason why the official should not have the same benefit that we all have, all right? And whether it's a 25-year-old on Sunday watching the game at a bar, a 12-year-old sitting on his couch watching the game with his dad, all of us have the benefit of 8, 10, 12 different angles in crystal clear HD. We get to see every play at every angle. And that's why we're seeing more stuff now. We're seeing more mistakes that the officials are making. We're seeing more things the officials are missing. And their job is really, really, really hard. I mean, anybody who's stood on the sideline for an NFL game has seen this, how fast everything moves. I don't know how coaches operate that down there. I don't know how officials operate down there. We have to train yourself to do it because everything at field level is such a blur. And so if they've got these challenging games and we have the technology, why is it that, again, the 12-year-old on the couch, the 25-year-old in the bar has the benefit of all of this technology, this great technology that's allowed us to see the game on another level, and the officials on the field who are making the calls, who are deciding games, who are sometimes, in some cases, determining the way seasons are going to play out, why don't they have the benefit of it? So I think this is a good first step in that direction. It's not massive change to what the replay official up there can do, but it's a step in the direction of the sky judge because it's a response to what happened in the Saints-Rams NFC Championship game. And I know one of the things that the coaches wanted to push through, the original proposal the coaches voted 32-0 on, which was to make pass interference offensive and defensive plus hits to defenseless players and roughing the passer. They wanted to make that reviewable and give the replay official jurisdiction over those for the entire game. Like, there are a lot of people that are optimistic that we're going to see that soon, and then that would be a real step towards getting the sky judge in play, having a sky judge in place, which, and I'm going to bring in Jenny now. I think it makes all the sense in the world, Jenny. I mean, it's just, like, I think we overcomplicate this too much. We think about the quote-unquote unintended consequences of all of this stuff. And really, it's just football down there. And it makes sense to have someone who's part of the officiating crew to be sitting up in the booth, watching the broadcast feed, having the benefit of what we have at home, and being able to just buzz down. And this doesn't need to be an official capacity. This doesn't need to be overruling them. But if it's obvious, buzzing down and just saying, listen, you got this wrong, throw the flag, or pick that flag up. It seems like the easiest thing in the world to me to find to correct something that I think is long needed to be corrected, which is that the officials on the field do not have the benefit on all calls of what we have at home.
Yeah, one thing you heard a lot of coaches talking about was walking before you can run, right? So that this was a first step toward what they hope will be bigger changes in the future. It is somewhat stunning that it got through, though, because going to Arizona, you know, you heard a lot of resistance to it. You heard how many teams and owners were, you know, anti-replay. The league has had long held beliefs that were sort of, you know, getting any replay in the game over the last, you know, what, you know, 15 years was a uphill battle, right? So I mean, there were games in the 90s, I guess, maybe more than 15 years, but right? I mean, they, you always hear people talk about, wow, some people didn't want any replay in the game. And, you know,
yep.
John Gruden is one head coach who's always been kind of like resistant to replay. So it's interesting that we saw this major shift from when they arrived at the meetings when we didn't know if anything would get done to not only making pass interference a penalty reviewable, but also non-calls reviewable.
Right.
And I think what you really saw was coaches were like, we got to get this done. We got to have some kind of change to modernize the way the game is called. And then you saw Goodell getting involved. I mean, we stood there in that hallway, Albert, outside the meeting room, and they were taking breaks, and you saw Goodell meeting with, you know,
yep.
Rich McKay and John Mara, and you just heard little trickles of things like eye in the sky, and you heard final 2 minutes, and you could sort of see where things were going, but then there was 6 and 6A and 6B and 6C.
Yep.
So, you know, it was a little bit of a scramble, I think.
I mean, I think the commissioner deserves credit for listening to both sides and not being so much an agent just of the owners, but being kind of, I think, what he's supposed to be, which is an overseer of the game, you know, the game itself. And I think the coaches deserve credit too. Mike Tomlin and Sean Payton on the competition committee, John Harbaugh and Jason Garrett, who were empowered by the other coaches to sort of take the lead on the issue of replay. Again, I just think it's, I mean, Jenny, I think it's just too easy. It's just like we have the technology to do it. The reason it didn't exist in 1960 and 1970 and 1980 is because they didn't have the technology back then. We do have the technology now, so we should use it. And that'll be a good jumping off point for our first news topic, which is the actual rule itself. And that is, again, a big change. Offensive, defensive pass interference, both of those now are going to be reviewable, and not only are the calls going to be reviewable, non-calls are going to be reviewable too. I know, Jenny, I talked to Rich McKay coming into the meetings, and they had run analytics on it, and these predictive analytics that determined the 50 most impactful calls of 2018, and 25 of them were pass interference calls, which is a staggering number. Like, what do you think of just the rule change itself, the fact that offensive and defensive pass interference are now reviewable? They can throw the challenge flag on that. And of course, the replay official has the power to change those calls in the last 2.5 minutes.
I think they set it up in a way that it mitigates some of the concerns about, for instance, increasing the length of the game, right? Because the first 20 minutes of each half, it's up to the coaches to challenge. And they still only have 2 challenges and then a third if they get both of the first 2 right. So they still have to be careful with how they're going to use their challenge flags. And Sean Payton said, you know, it might even make coaches more likely to sort of keep a challenge flag in your pocket, because you know that when you're getting down to like the final 4 minutes of the game, you know, you might have a pass interference that you need to challenge. And then inside of 2 minutes, you know, it goes to the replay assistant upstairs. And so I think that, you know, that helps prevent, I guess, one thing that came up was they didn't want coaches, you know, throwing challenge flags on a Hail Mary at the end of the game.
Yep.
And so putting it up, kicking it up to the replay assistant inside of 2 minutes. So you see sort of a built-in guard against the concern of making the game longer again. I don't think it'll make the game much longer. You know, they had this similar rule change in the CFL, and it's worked very well there. So I think it was a good step, but I agree with you. You mentioned the other penalties that the coaches want to add in, and you know, roughing the passer, forcible contact to a defenseless player. I mean, I think ultimately the direction is to do more toward a sky judge, or also toward the Belichick. Belichick's idea of everything's challengeable.
Right. And I agree with Peyton. Like, I think if you're a coach, like, and you know there could be a 35-yard pass interference penalty that you can challenge later in the game, you probably are going to be more judicious with that challenge flag, right? Like, you're probably going to be a little more careful about how you use it. I also think that, and this was brought up a couple times to me, I also think that this could end up having more of an effect, and people aren't paying attention to this because defensive pass interference gets more attention. This could have an effect on offensive pass interference and how that's called too, because I feel like there's a lot of things that they let go, right? That they let's like pick plays, rub play. You know, there are things that are close that I don't think we talk a lot about, especially in the way like the offense is played now, like where, you know, you just sort of an accepted part of the game that may be against the letter of the law. But if you're replaying it and you look at it, it's like, yeah, that's a flag. Like, or yeah, that's illegal. And so that's what I think that's going to be like. If there is like one like thing that we're maybe not looking at as much right now, maybe that's it. Like maybe offensive pass interference, and maybe this ends up helping the defense, you know, and that it's harder to run those sorts of plays now. Or there's more of coaches can kind of game that a little bit better on defense.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. And I think it sort of feeds into the other question that's the next step of this is having New York come up with a standard for what interference is upon replay, right?
Right.
Because we've always seen pass interference be called in real time, and what do you see in real time? And when you're slowing it down, you're going to see a lot more. And can New York come up with a consistent standard that coaches are behind? And I think there's probably some apprehension of that because right. We've seen with new penalties in the past this transition period and a struggle to sort of come up with a consistent standard.
Yep.
And so I think there's a lot of pressure on the league office and Al Riveron to get that right.
Right. Okay, cool. So we're not going to – we've already hit you over the head with the rules enough this week. So so we're going to jump into football now. News topic number two of the week. And before Jenny gets to it, this is our tribute to Connor. We tried to make it work. We tried to get Connor on the podcast this week. Unfortunately, from a technological standpoint, because we're coming in on Thursday, Connor comes into the office on Tuesday, and because and our producer Brandon can vouch for us, he's sitting right next to me. We are literally like podcasting now in an under renovation studio. This is like not a construction site, right? But I guess the 2019 version of a construction site, you got wires everywhere. Our tribute to Connor is that we're going to use his vocab on our podcast here. And so, Jenny, news topic number two in Connor's voice.
Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin addressed the mass departures from his team for the first time at a coach's breakfast on Tuesday, saying, "That's life," and imploring the world at large to move on. While he admitted there was some disappointment, the stage is now set for a very different-looking Steelers team in 2019. And, you know, the Steelers are at an interesting place right now.
Yep.
You lose Bell, you lose Brown. You know, for so long we've been talking about maximizing this, you know, window of the three killer bees, right?
Yep.
And now two of the three are gone, and they're reshaping what the team looks like. And there's, a lot of questions being raised this offseason, first by Brown and then by Bell, about Roethlisberger's leadership. And I think it'll be interesting to see what the result of that is. You know, I noticed what both Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson did not totally dismiss the criticism that Wentz received, right?
Yep.
They took it
even
head
Lurie.
On. Even Lurie. They all said, you know what? Wentz can be better. He can grow. There are things he can do differently. And I thought that was very interesting, right? Did not just say, oh, this is absurd.
Right.
You know, these are, you know, these
I mean, Lurie talked
aren't
about,
valid.
When Lurie talked about like type A personality, and he's very much like he can be pushy and he can be aggressive and like all of that stuff. Like Lurie, when he was asked the question, kind of answered it in like, well, this is who he is. Like, so that's sort of, we understand that this is part of the deal with a quarterback of that magnitude. And I thought that was interesting too, is that instead of coming out and strongly saying like, I don't agree with this, which I think a lot of people would, that'd be like the immediate reaction of a lot of teams when their quarterback's in the crosshairs. It didn't really happen that way. On the Steelers, here's what I think is most interesting. What I think is fascinating about where they're at, and I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Like, I think what happened with Bell and Brown is sort of a result of the way that program's been set up for a long time, and there's a very player-friendly place. It's a very be-yourself type of place. Do they have to rein that back in now? Like, do they have to draw, like, lines in different places where maybe they weren't before? You know, that's my question. And do they have to at some point privately, now publicly they've supported him, do they have to sit down with Ben? And do they have to say, we need you to set a better example for the rest of the locker room? I just think that there's a lot of questions out there that I think result from Bell and Brown being gone that go beyond just the production that you're going to lose.
Yeah, and that's why I, you know, brought up the Eagles example, because it does seem like, and obviously Wentz and Roethlisberger are at very different points in their career, and perhaps in the case of Wentz, they're looking to, you know, continue to help grow and steer a young guy, where Ben's on the back end of his career. But I do think it's, you know, when you hear this kind of feedback from two of the better offensive players of this current era, right? I think you have to listen and think, you know, if I'm not getting through to everybody in the locker room, what can I do better? I think that's a natural reaction. I don't think it should just, I've seen a lot of, you know, discounting in the Pittsburgh media and Pittsburgh Steelers fans, you know, writing the Bell story. I got a lot of backlash about that. And, you know, I think that when a player says their speaks their mind, you could say, hey, maybe I don't agree with all of this, or maybe whatever. But he's bringing his perspective. He's sharing how a key contributor on that team felt in the locker room. And I think that you would be silly not to listen.
Yeah. And it so that like it's just it's going to be really interesting to see the first time Ben talks how he reacts to this. Is he defiant? Because he's been defiant to this sort of stuff in the past. Is he, does he see it as his responsibility to kind of, because I, like, here's the thing, like, I'm not, like, Bell and Brown are great players. I'm not all that worried about, like, the Steelers, like, ability to replace those guys. Like, different teams are really good at drafting, at picking different positions, right? Look at the Steelers' history. When was the last time they didn't have a really good running back?
You're right.
And James
Conner
stepped in and played really well, right? Look at the receivers that they've drafted. I mean, you can go down the list. Emmanuel Sanders, Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, Martavius Bryant, Juju Smith-Schuster.
Plaxico Burress.
I mean, like, Plaxico Burress was the rare one that they drafted high. The rest of these guys were like second, third, fourth, fifth round picks, you know? And so many, like, they, my point is, like, I'm not as worried with them. I'm not quite as worried about their ability to replace the production on the field, because they've got really good history as far as replacing great players at those positions. They struggled on defense. Drafting on defense, they've struggled the last few years. But Kevin Colbert's shown a real ability to draft skill position players around Ben Roethlisberger. I'm a little more like, what I'd be worried about is, like, how do you react to the fallout of everything that happened, which is what you're getting at.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's, you know, last season was a disappointing season. You know, they missed the playoffs, and you know, that for that organization, that's enough of a reason to look in the mirror. And then you have all, you know, high profile players that don't want to play there anymore. And so I do think there's going to, it's going to be an interesting offseason in Pittsburgh, and a lot of it will probably be behind closed doors. But I do think there are some interesting conversations they'll have to have about the direction of the team.
No question about it. All right. News topic number three. The Jets continue to shop their number three overall pick at the owners' meetings, or did continue to shop their number three overall pick at the owners' meetings this week, hoping that someone will give them a chance to beef up their roster a few key positions. Will Mike Maccagni's public yard sale yield any results, or is it just typical pre-draft jockeying? Reminder, that is in Connor Orr's voice. We're using Connor Orr's vocab here. I think they have a shot, Jenny. I think they have a shot to move it. Here's why. I think the draft starts at two or three. Like, I just, you know, you always hear that. Like, what are the automatics? Well, maybe, like, it just feels like it's starting to crystallize a little bit where it, maybe, like my feeling is it's probably Kyler Murray 1 to Arizona, Nick Bosa 2 to the Niners. And I think the draft really starts at 3 now. And so if you're one of these teams, if you're the Giants, if you're the Jaguars, the Raiders, like, whoever it is that maybe likes Dwayne Haskins, do you get antsy? Like, does he get hot over the next couple of weeks? We've seen this before with quarterbacks. And so I think the key for the Jets right now is probably just to remain patient and wait for the Arizona thing to really start to show itself. Like, if Rosen gets traded, say, let the Arizona thing start to show itself a little bit, get the Niners to sort of show their cards a little bit. And if that happens, or even on draft night, you can start to work out, like, okay, how do we see to it? And the Raiders working out, the fact that the Raiders are going to work out Murray and Haskins next week, I think creates some tension too. I think the Jets are in a pretty good spot here where they might have an ability to move that number three pick and make up for the second round pick that they're missing which was a result of the Sam Darnold trade.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with both parts of this question. I mean, I do think it's typical pre-draft jockeying, right? But this is the time of year that we see 32 headlines, right. XGM, open for business, right?
Yep.
We're looking to move up or down for some reason that always catches on as a headline. But I agree. I do think the Jets would like to move down, recoup some of the capital they gave up to move up to get Darnold last year. And yeah, it's an interesting year. I mean, the one deterrent is like, it's not a year where teams might fall in love with a specific quarterback because it's not the best quarterback class we've seen. But maybe.
But I would say this. Like, yeah, I remember 3 years ago, if he came out at, in December, January, it was like, oh, this isn't the same as Mariota and Winston. And then Jared Goff started to build momentum. And then Carson Wentz started to build momentum. And I remember thinking, like, there's no way the quarterbacks are going to go 1-2 because the teams up there weren't going to draft one, right? Like, so you had, who was it, Tennessee and the Browns, 1-2. Or the Browns might have, you know. But and then the momentum started, the ball started rolling, and now all of a sudden not only did quarterbacks go 1-2, you had teams giving up huge capital to move up into those spots to take them. And, you know, obviously the Rams wind up with Goff and the Eagles wind up with Wentz. So I don't think it's impossible that – one way or another, momentum builds where, again, like, and it sounds funny because nothing's going to change the way that Drew Lock or Dwayne Haskins or Daniel Jones played in the fall. But sometimes, like, these things can be just a matter of buzz starting to build on a player where it's like, and at that position where it's like, well, we really like him. We don't, like, is it worth a third round pick or a second round pick to make sure that we get him? Yeah, sure it is.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, a team becomes convinced with somebody that, you know what, this is the guy. I mean, that is what can happen, right? You're exactly right. We always hear all of these risers, and the risers doesn't ever really happen. But if you're talking about drafting a quarterback, I do think this time of year when head coaches and GMs are spending one-on-one time with these guys, right, I think you can fall in love with someone and then say, we've got to get this guy.
Right, right. And I don't think it's like even like the Carson Wentz thing, like the, I don't know that there were all these teams behind the second pick that were, I don't think there were like all these teams at 3, 4, and 5 where like you thought like, oh, well, they're going to take a quarterback, so we better move up. But I think the Eagles took the approach there, like, better safe than sorry.
Yeah.
Like, we really like him, and if we get this right, we're never going to you're not even going to think twice about what you gave up to go and get him.
Right.
And that's the case now. I mean, Carson Wentz has panned out despite the injuries. Looks like he's going to be their guy for the next 10 years. No one's going to remember what they gave up to go and get him, you know? No one's going to remember that. It's like people only remember the Robert Griffin trade and all the Redskins gave up because it didn't work out.
It didn't work out, right?
Right. People don't really remember. People don't talk too much about what the Giants did, what the Giants gave up to go and get Eli. The reason people don't talk about it is because Eli won 2 Super Bowls. So I think if you really like the guy, if you got conviction on the guy, I don't mind the idea of moving up to go and get him and making sure that you get him. Okay. I want to tell you guys about Roman. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. I haven't been to the doctor in forever. I need to go sometime soon. And the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman has created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. Because you guys are so loyal as listeners to this podcast, I'm going to give you guys a deal here. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you got to do is visit GetRoman.com/Breer. That's my last name, B-R-E-E-R. Complete a dynamic online visit. Chat with a doctor and get genuine medication delivered to your door, again, in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really simple, so take care of it. One more time for a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/Breer. That's GetRoman.com/Breer for a free online visit, GetRoman.com/Breer. I guess there's no smooth transition from that back to football, but we'll have you give it a shot, Jenny. News item number 4.
All right, news item. Bruce Arians addressed for the first time the hiring of 2 full-time female coaches by saying, the fact that their gender's different, who gives a shit? They're good coaches. Now, if they can't do it, they'll get fired like everybody else. Arians has, you know, in multiple areas...
been a champion of this.
Yeah, but, you know... his coaching staff has never been homogenous, right? Right. He's always, you know, given opportunities to a wide variety of races and now genders. And so it's no surprise that he would have, you know,
he'd be the guy who'd say something like this. Yeah. I mean, like, you look at his staff now in Arizona, Byron Leftwich, Harold Goodwin are the coordinators, run game and pass game on offense. Todd Bowles is the coordinator on defense. Now, obviously, he's more established. But BA has always been a champion of diversity in the coaching ranks. And so it doesn't surprise, I don't think it surprises anyone that he'd be the one that would sort of be out in front on this at all.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, I lost my train of thought entirely, Albert. I know what I was going to say. It was a bad hiring cycle.
We told everybody this pod is a fire drill.
It was a bad hiring cycle, as we all know, for non-white coaches.
Right.
But it, you know, I think there are people like Bruce Arians in the league who are working against, you know, the strong, you know.
Against the trend.
And I think that it's, you know, you appreciate when he can speak eloquently on the subject, whether it be gender or race, and also giving opportunities to people who deserve them anyway, you know, and just have been pigeonholed because maybe you're a running backs coach who never called plays and, you know, people think you can't be such and such on a staff. So.
I think what everybody ultimately wants is to get to the point where we don't have to talk about this anymore and it's a true meritocracy. Everything's a true meritocracy. And getting there, I think, should be the goal of all of this. And that's why I like Arian's comment, which is the who gives a shit they're good coaches.
Right.
Like, that's like how do you make your team better? All these guys are under such pressure to win, you know? I think so much of this is about getting people in the pipeline, creating relationships, because to me, like, that's where all of this happens, right? Like, you're creating, like, one coach creates a relationship with another coach, and now he's got background with that coach, and so he gets his shot and brings the other coach with him, right? Like, those are I think so much of this is just getting people in the pipeline. And that's why I think something like this, to me, Jenny, like this sort of action is almost more important than like the opposite end of it, which is people becoming head coaches, right? Like, just getting people in the pipeline at the grassroots level, I think, can be even more important than what happens at the top end.
Yeah, absolutely. And we see gaps. That's why you need white men to help close these gaps, not because you're giving jobs out of charity, but because there's been gaps in networking and just people being in position to get opportunities who may have the same qualifications but don't know somebody, right? And that's where, you know, Scott Pioli has done a lot of work in this area. And it's great to see Bruce Arians as well. He spoke at this women's symposium at the combine with women who worked in football and talking about giving opportunities. And he said, you know what? I didn't get a resume from anyone in the room. Next time, send me your resume. Right. You know what I mean? So he is, you know, I think his approach to this is refreshing, because too often you hear things like, well, I want my daughter to get opportunities when she's X age. And and that's not coming from a bad place, but it's a very narrow way to talk about it. And I think Arians is just being like, hey, I'm hiring good people. I'm trying to close a gap that exists in the pipeline and have solutions for it.
Sorry, now we're having mic. So this is all that. Actually, I think it might have been a headphone problem, because now I hear myself okay.
We're on brand for our fire drill podcast. Yeah,
very, very, very professional here. This is a high-end operation. News topic number 5, Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski announced his retirement after 9 mostly incredible seasons in New England. He figures to be a first ballot Hall of Famer whenever that time comes. While Bill Belichick would not address unretirement hypotheticals, Gronkowski's agent, Drew Rosenhaus, has admitted he wouldn't be surprised to see Gronkowski return. Let's start, Jenny, with his legacy, which I think, you know, I think as much as anything else, I had one of his coaches say to me on Sunday night, this is like, to really conceptualize what he is, which was like one of the best blocking tight ends ever, one of the best pass catching tight ends ever. He said, this is like Magic Johnson being able to play center in the 1980 NBA Finals, only Gronk could do it every week. And so the caveat on all of this, of course, is that he didn't have longevity. He only made it 9 seasons, and through those seasons, there was time he missed, right? And 2018 wasn't at the level that some of the previous years had been. I think his legacy is that he's one of the few players where you can say, when he was in the, when he was at his best, he was playing that position at a higher level than anyone had ever played it. And I sort of felt like, of the guys that I've covered, and this would be my 15th year covering the league, there are very few. Like, I think, like, I would have put, like, Darrell Revis at one point. I always said, like, he might have an argument, right? Like, that he was up, like he was playing that position at that high level. I felt like Calvin Johnson, you know, for a while, like had an argument. Now, he had injuries too, but he had an argument to be a guy who was playing that position at as high a level as he's ever played, as has ever been played. And with Gronkowski, I just feel like there's probably maybe a little less doubt on him when you start to talk about that. Like, he absolutely was playing that position at as high a level as anybody's ever played it.
Yeah, and reshaping what that position could do, right? All of the attributes that he brought, he was a constant dilemma for opposing defenses. And, you know, covering the Jets during Gronkowski's era, you know, covering Rex Ryan's Jets, you know, he's a defensive-minded head coach. And how many times did you sit there talking to them about how hard Gronkowski was, you know, trying to design coverages, you know, using the sidelines to your advantage if you could. And basically, they could use – what was remarkable there is, you know, they could keep the same personnel package on the field but run totally different concepts. Out of it, because he could just go anywhere, and so it was
the ultimate queen on the chessboard.
Yes,
like that's what he was. Like, he was the guy who I think like the Patriots' ideal has always been, like, when we break the huddle, you don't know where our players are going.
Exactly, and that's he epitomized that.
Right, like he epitomized that. I'm also not going to be surprised if he comes back.
I mean, it was pretty amazing that, like, instantly, Rosenhaus was acknowledging that it was a possibility. Yeah. Like, there was no, like, facade. Right.
So here's why, because I want to run this by you, like, what you think. I still, like, remember, like, talking to him after the Super Bowl and how this was so satisfying for him because, like, this year was hard, right? And I think it's very easy for us to look at the end and forget what he was like in November and December, where he looked downtrodden. He wasn't playing the same. Like, I think part of the reason why he's retiring is because the last 2 years, really, how hard that 6 or 7 months has been. And so if that was that hard on you or me, what you would be looking at now is how intimidating that 6 or 7 months would look, right? Like, how hard that 6 or 7 months would look. And you'd be saying to yourself, man, do I really want to do that again? Like that, like training camp and then preseason and then 16 games of the regular season, getting myself from ready for Sunday every week. And do I really want to put myself through all of that? And I just think if they were going to call him like November 1st, and now all of a sudden, instead of 6 or 7 months, it's 6 or 7 weeks plus playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't that change the equation for you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a totally different thing.
I mean, the betting lines are like almost expecting it to happen, right? Like, I mean, everyone's just kind of talking about it like, yeah, this is going to happen. Like, we'll see you in November. But I mean, he has a lot of other interests. There are a lot of other things he can do.
You just nailed it there. Like, that's the flip side of like the way I've been thinking about this. Like, is there a chance he has such a good time over the next few months? He's like, screw it.
I don't want to go to practice. I don't want to run the hill, you know?
I don't think anybody's going to have a better time during retirement than Gronk. So, like, that's part of it too, isn't it? Like, you have such a good time. It's like, why the hell would I want to stop doing this and go out and get my, you know, my back, not like my back, my knee. Like, why would I want to deal with all of that again when I'm doing all of this?
Right. I mean,
I don't think he's going to be the guy who's going to be sitting at home on the couch like having a hard time, like basically forcing himself to watch games so he can remember how much he misses it. You know?
This is not that situation.
Right.
This is not that situation. Right.
Okay, cool. So we got through the Jenny part of it and we're about to get into the six pack. But first, I want to tell you guys about Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood does not charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there's no account minimum deposit to get started. You can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and market data and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock collections such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio, discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. I'm on Robinhood. I'm going to give you guys a chance to get on Robinhood. Robinhood is giving listeners of this podcast, the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. You can sign up. Here's my last name again. Sign up at breer.robinhood.com. That's breer.robinhood.com. Jenny, thanks for going through the fire drill with me.
Yeah, I think it was fun. I enjoyed it.
All right, we'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Usually on Tuesdays, this week on Thursday, put the call out on Twitter. Four questions. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. That means I hit that little heart there, and you get an answer here. We'll start with question number one from AK. That's at the dash line. Are the Redskins a serious candidate to trade up for a quarterback? I'm going to say yes. I saw Bruce Allen at Dwayne Haskins' pro day. I've also heard some rumblings that they could be in the mix to take a quarterback. I don't know whether or not they would trade up. I do know they're doing their homework on this year's group. The idea that Alex Smith's going to come back, period, is iffy at this point. Case Keenum is not the long-term answer. Obviously, Colt McCoy has been a valuable piece there, but he isn't either. They're eventually going to need to find a long-term answer, whether that's this year, next year, a trade for Josh Rosen, whatever it is. They need to find they're going to need to find a way to get back on solid ground at that position. And so I certainly think they're in play to take a quarterback this year. Question number two is from Emoji 100% 49ers Faith at 49er Faithful 365. That is a very detailed, colorful handle on Twitter. If Bosa's gone, what direction do you see the 49ers going? Do you think it will be Williams or Allen? Or could they find a trade partner? What benefits them the most? I mean, to me, I think the best fit if Bosa was gone would probably be Josh Allen, the Kentucky linebacker who can be an edge rusher, who can play up, who can do a bunch of different things. And he could fit in different ways. I mean, he could be your KJ Wright in that Seattle type of scheme, or he could be another pass rush piece. They're always looking for pass rushers, which is part of the reason why you sign D Ford, and you've got all those guys you've taken in the first round, you're still in play for Bosa. I would say Quinnen Williams might be a little more difficult to fit in just because they've got so many interior guys that they've drafted over the last few years. And Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, and Solomon Thomas. And so I would tend to lean Josh Allen there if Bosa is gone. The question is, and I think a lot of teams feel this way, do you view Quinnen Williams and Nick Bosa on a different level than everyone else? If you do, then I think you have to look at the idea of trading down, which if the Cardinals were to take Bosa, which is what would need to happen for this to play out this way, maybe you have a market for a quarterback trade on that second pick. If someone's in love with Kyle or Dwayne, they move up to go and get him. Question number three from Ted Glover at Purple Buckeye. Does Kirk Cousins get a contract extension with Minnesota, and will that also be fully guaranteed? We're still a year away from having that discussion. I think one thing that's really interesting is the amount of leverage he has. They can't franchise him, or they would have to franchise him, I think. I can't remember if he has a no franchise tag clause. He may. Even if he doesn't, it would be a third franchise tag, which would be 144% of his back-end cap number. They can't tag him again in 2021. And so I think the question here becomes, does he get to free agency again? And so he has a chance at doing like another bananas deal if he can play well this year. I think whether or not he plays well this year is going to depend somewhat on how they do in the draft as far as addressing the offensive line. But I think there's certainly a chance that he's going to get a very, very, very serious look at doing that sort of contract again in 2021 if he can recreate the play that got him that contract in the first place in Washington. Question number four, this is from National Security Skeleton. That's at Rubber Skeleton. Would you support Kanye West as a choice for the next Monday Night Football color guy? I've been down the non-football road before. I wasn't wild about Dennis Miller being in that seat, so I'm going to say no on Kanye West. And I'll repeat what I said before. I like the idea of Nate Burleson and Mike Robinson being in the Monday Night Football booth because I put a premium on chemistry. I think both those guys know the game inside and out. I've been around both those guys. I work with both those guys at NFL Network. Both those guys are smart. They're quick with their words. they've got television experience, and most of all, they've got chemistry with one another. And I think that if there's one thing that can screw up all the good qualities that someone has going into one of those jobs, is that they don't have the chemistry with the people around them. With those two, you'd have built-in chemistry, and it would just be a matter of getting them synced up with the right play-by-play guy. I'm serious when I say this. I'm not joking. I think those two guys would be the right two guys for those jobs. Question number five. This is from Stephen Sheehan. With New England's aging roster and need to rebuild the offense for the future, how do you see Belichick utilizing his 12 draft picks? The good news for the Patriots, because they have struck out on some of these phone calls they've made on receivers over the course of the last month. The good news for the Patriots is that while you're not going to find a game-changing receiver in all likelihood in the second and third rounds, there are going to be a lot of good complementary type receivers available in the second and third rounds. That's where the strength of the receiver group is. There's a lot of good number two types that are going to be available there in the second and third rounds. And there are a lot of good tight ends in this draft. And so it wouldn't surprise me if we see at least one tight end, at least one receiver, and maybe multiple at either positions taken in that area where the Patriots have, I believe, five picks. They have the 32nd pick and then 2 seconds and 2/3. So it wouldn't surprise me if we see three of those five picks wind up being receivers and tight ends based not only on their needs, but also the strength of this draft class. And finally, question number six. This is from Matthias at Sherbin81. Why the Chargers disappeared from the NFL landscape this offseason? Because they already have one of the most talented rosters in football. They've rewarded a lot of those guys with contract extensions. And if you're in that position, you don't have a lot of room to operate from a cap standpoint. So, you know, they wind up letting a Jason Verrett go who's had injury issues. They let a Tyrell Williams go because they've got Keenan Allen and Mike Williams in the roster. I think the Chargers are in a really good spot, man. And if I'm the Chargers, I think the one big offseason move might be a move to find Philip Rivers' replacement. And if I'm them, I might be kicking the tires on Josh Rosen right now. And maybe I'm flipping the 28th pick for Josh Rosen because at the low end, he's a cheap backup for the next 3 years. And on the high end, he could replace Philip Rivers. And oh, by the way, they're trouble selling that team, right, in Los Angeles. Maybe wouldn't hurt to have the hometown kid coming in as Philip Rivers' eventual replacement. Oh, we got a bonus question here, too, from O's Cruz. That's at that O's Cruz. Please ask Jenny why she is so awesome. Jenny is awesome. Thank you to Jenny for coming in this week. Thank you to Brandon for overseeing this. I just showed up here, and the equipment was here. Like, this fire drill, I hope you guys liked it. We want your feedback on all of our podcasts, but especially this podcast, because if you made it this far, that means we pulled off the fire drill successfully, right, Brandon? Yeah. So if you made it this far and you're actually listening to us still, then that means we've actually – fire alarm went off and we got out of the building safely. So send your feedback to me at Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert_Breer on Instagram, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook. Like I said, we always appreciate your feedback. Got some great feedback last week. We always welcome that. We want to make this your podcast. And always remember also to listen to the other MMQB podcast that's running this time of year. That's the Monday Morning Podcast with Andy Benoit and Gary Gramley. You can get us on one feed now, the MMQB NFL Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, wherever you guys get your shows. Next week, we'll be back at our regular time. We'll see you guys then.